to the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at the Decoy in Spring Branch.
He's Blank, I'm Branham. We are the Decoy. The boys are at the Decoy. I'm in Dallas. Astros opening day, college hoops coming up a little bit later today. Continues tomorrow, Houston, Duke. That's why I'm in Dallas, but if you're in Houston and you're looking for a place to watch the game, West Houston Watch Party inside the Decoy. Cougs full audio on that game, live DJ during the commercials as well. Fantastic spot if you're looking for a place to watch the Rockets tomorrow. Astros on my mind. They're tied at 4, first pitch at 6:05. Jumped out to a 4-0 lead. Fromber was playing with fire all game long. Eventually, he got burned as they scored 3 runs in the 5th. The Yankees would tie with a run in the 6th. And then Ryan Pressly is pitching the 7th. Blankers, we thought he would be the 8th inning guy. You don't have Abreu the first 2 games. And Ryan Pressly is in the 7th inning.
Yeah, there's a couple things I already don't like a whole heck of a lot here. I didn't like he pinch hit for Jake with Singleton with 2 on and 2 out at the bottom half of the last inning. I'm a little bit surprised that Pressly came in this early, I guess because Abreu is suspended for the first 2 games. Maybe that altered his thinking. Brian and I were talking about where the lefties were coming up and where in the lineup he was going to use Hader, but I'm a little surprised to see him in the 7th as well.
I don't think it affects Abreu at all, because if you had Abreu, there's your 8th inning guy. Like, if Abreu was in the bullpen, it would make more sense for Pressly in the 7th. I think it has everything to do with where they're at in the lineup. You had Judge, Stanton, Rizzo, so 3-4-5. So this might be a tell that Espada is going to use his, weapons, whether it's Pressly, whether it's Abreu, against the middle of the order in higher leverage situations, or at least, when the opponent has their best spot in the batting order coming up. I think it might be an early tell.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. I don't think he's going to be so much worried about the individual players and what their stats are. I think he's going to worry about matchups, and he's going to utilize those guys accordingly. If that's the case, I'm fine.
Yeah, the 7th inning was interesting with the pinch hit thing. Like, okay, I don't love the pinch hit. Myers homered earlier, but Myers hits lefties better than he hits righties. There was a righty in the game. I can understand pinch hitting Myers there. I don't love it, but I can understand it. Questionable thing was you went with Singleton over
Singleton.
Dubon.
Yeah, yeah.
How did you not go Dubon there?
That's why I said he's boom or bust, and he's a whole lot more bust than boom. I don't understand him right there.
Because you weren't looking for a bomb. You had runners at first and second.
No,
just any kind of hit
would – yeah, hit or get on base and turn it over. That'd be fantastic.
Fire Espada. Fire him. Get rid of him. Get rid of him. Fire him now. That was kind of odd. Kind of odd, I'll just say that. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. Speaking of the Strohs, top 100 players in baseball. How many do you think the Astros have on it?
5.
Close. They have 7 on the top 100. You want me to go best to worst or worst to best from the 7 that are on it?
Worst to best.
Okay. Number 90, Yiner Diaz. Does it surprise you that Yiner Diaz cracked the top 100?
Yes. I did not have him on a top 100 list because he's got to prove himself for a full season first. I got to believe that people voting on this and the way they calculate this, you'd have to see him for a full season before you're capable of putting him in the top 100.
This is the resume talent conversation. I don't think he has a resume of a top 100 player, but I think he has the talent of a top 100 player. But this is usually resume-based, so I'm surprised to see him on here as well. He beats the next guy on the list, Justin Verlander, by 4 spots. Verlander, 86, Yiner, 90. I think they went more talent and what they expect this year than what their resume is, because I think that's the best example of that. Yiner, 90, almost no resume. Verlander, a huge resume at 86.
Yeah, I'm even surprised there. I would think that Verlander's a guy that not only the resume, but because of the lineup he's got, and the 3 guys at the back of the bullpen, that they would expect that he might even be a little higher on the list because of the fact that he might have more success being in this environment.
Number 41 is Jose Altuve. I don't really have an argument there. I think that's probably
at this point in his career, yeah.
Especially if you're going like total game and not just offense, because if you're going just offensive players, then Altuve is higher than 41. But if you're going the complete package, I have no problem with 41. They have Tucker at 35.
Ooh.
Argument there. It seems a little
low. Yeah, I think it's a little low. I could see Tuck in the top 25. I think that obviously he doesn't get the kind of overall marketing attention that a lot of guys in big markets do, but I think Tuck's capable of being a top 25-ish player.
Yeah, I think 35 is a little bit low. They have Bregman at 34. I would have Tucker ahead of Bregman.
Yep,
and I
too.
Might have Altuve ahead of Bregman. Now, Bregman gives you the defense and Altuve doesn't, so it's probably the difference there. I feel like Bregman's a little bit too high and Tucker's a little bit too low.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah, but from a complete package, I don't know if I hate that he's in front of Altuve. Offensively, Altuve's better. Number
for
28,
sure.
Fromber.
Interesting. They're expecting that he's going to bounce back and be just fine, Fromber?
See, I feel when they look at Fromber, they don't really understand the second half of the season that he had.
Right.
Like, they don't, the national guys don't realize that as much as the local guys. It's like whenever you pull up Fromber's numbers the last few, like even last year, his numbers overall look fine. And then you add that to his previous 2 years, and you're like, oh, this guy's a really good pitcher. But you don't really understand how the second half of the year, including today, how you're kind of walking on pins and needles anytime he's on the mound.
Night meet day. There were two sides to the story. It was night and day, and yeah, it was not. It was definitely a frantic watch at the second half of the season. Yeah, I'm a little surprised at that.
Last guy they have is Jordan at number 10. Do you feel like that's fair for Jordan being at number 10?
I do not. I honestly, we had this conversation when MLB was doing their top five players in baseball conversations. I think Jordan, if he's not in the top five, he's very, very close to it. I think 10 is too low. I think he's one of the, if worst case scenario, I think he's one of the top six or seven players in baseball.
See, the fact that he doesn't do much defensively, I think, is why he's closer to 10 than he is 5 on most of the top players list. I don't really have a huge contention with him being at number 10. He doesn't really do anything defensively. He's average when he plays out there. He doesn't play out there a lot. I don't want him to play out there. I'd rather him be the 10th best player in baseball, according to this list, and never play the outfield than be third and play left field every single game. I'm willing to make that trade-off. But I do think he gets dinged because he doesn't play defenses, one, really that much, and then secondly, as good as some of the other guys that are in front of him, like a Mookie Betts or, you know, some of the center fielders that you would have ahead of him. I think Jordan on these types of lists gets dinged because of the defense.
You might be right. I just think on the flip side, he's capable of just completely dominating a game like very few. I mean, average power, you know, key moments, he's all that and more. He's so capable of absolutely, you know, putting a game on his shoulders that some guys can and some guys can't do, what, you know, depending on like guys like J-Rod or guys that you see as being top 10 type players. I just think he's a little low.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Which of these guys do you think is the most likely to outperform their ranking? Yiner 90, Verlander 86, Altuve 41, Tucker 35, Bregman 34, Fromber 28, Jordan 10.
I think for sure Jordan's going to – like I said, I made my argument for why I think Jordan's closer to, like, top five-ish. But I think the other two guys, because they don't know enough about Yiner, I think Yiner could have a monster season. And because Tucker was I think, too low on the list, I think Tucker could, as we talked about, possibly have an MVP-type season. But if Tucker has the kind of season he's capable of having, then I think that one, for me, is an assurity that he would move up.
Yeah, I would go Tucker, too. I think Tucker can have, like, a top 20-type season. Verlander missing a few starts and the fact that he's in his 40s, it's difficult there. I do think Verlander's getting slept on a little bit, though. Like, oh, you know, father time, and he's not going to be as good. I think Verlander can be better than what a lot of people were expecting. Do you think there was a snub at all? Go ahead.
No, I was going to say the same thing about Verlander. It goes back to what I said earlier. I think with this offense behind him, those three guys at the back end of the bullpen, and he's fully capable of giving you six innings, I think he has the potential of having a really good season for this team. And a really good season doesn't have to be Cy Young worthy to get up higher on this list than where he sits.
Any snubs, you feel?
Nah, not right now. No, I'm going around the diamond and thinking – I mean, what, the only guy
that... Chaz or Hader, maybe?
I was thinking Chaz or... Yeah, actually, yeah, Hader would be definitely someone.
I think those are the
ERA.
Top two names that you would bring up.
Yeah, it would be Chaz, Hader, and then it's possible it could be Javier if he gets back to where he was.
Yeah, 2022 Javier, yeah. I think, would be someone deserving to be on this list.
Yep.
Yeah, Javier could get back there with his good performance. It's hard for me to put a reliever as a top 100 player. just because they don't pitch the volume of some of these starters. But if you are going to rank relievers, Hader needs to be in that conversation. It is interesting with Chaz and Yiner, though. Like, Yiner being at 90 and then Chaz being admitted. Like, yeah, I think Chaz has a case to be in the top 100. I think that Chaz is still someone that's slept on a bit.
I agree.
Overlooked a bit.
I think everybody thought that that was just like a once-in-a-career year for him. And there's a lot of people sleeping on the fact that he could possibly be consistent. But maybe in a year's time, if he does has a similar season, people finally give him the respect he deserves. Because, like you talk about, Jeremy, defensively, there's an above-average defender that should play into it as well.
Yeah, he's especially in left. I think he's a really good defensive left fielder, and I think he's a solid defensive center fielder. 713-780-ESPN. So Saquon Barkley was on a podcast with the Kelseys today, and he said his number one choice entering free agency was actually the Texans. So if you're the Texans and you're Nick Caserio, would you rather have Saquon Barkley on a 3-year, $37.75 million deal, or Joe Mixon on a 3-year, $27 million deal? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, a word from a good friend, Doc Linville. Doc Linville, best in the business at the NeoGraft procedure. If you don't know what that is, but you are struggling with hair loss, you need to find out very quickly because the NeoGraft procedure is a game changer. It's not the sprays and the creams and the foams that just mask the problem. It's actually your own hair where you need it most because you can take your own hair. And genetically, what I found out from Doc Linville having a consultation with him is the fact that you're never going to lose the hair on the sides and the back of your head, no matter how bald you go on top or in front. So therefore, the bigger thing is he can take some of that hair from the sides and the back, put it where you need it, and suddenly you see results. You have more coverage area, a better overall appearance, and more confidence that goes with it. That consultation I'm talking about that I had with Doc Linville, you get it absolutely free because you listen to me and you listen to this station and you listen to us. All you got to do is go to 975hair.com and set up an appointment. Nothing out of pocket, no signing on the dotted line, no commitment, just you asking questions, getting answers, and seeing if the procedure is right for you too. I did it. I couldn't be happier with it. I see the results every day, and I am ecstatic. You could be next in line. All you got to do is go to 975hair.com. Tell them I sent you by. They are the best in the business. Go see Doc Linville today.
You're listening to the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at the Decoy in Spring Branch.
Bees Blank, I'm Branham. Get to the Decoy. The boys will be there till 6. You can hang out way longer than that, though. Astros opening day today. I wish it started at 6:05. College Hoot beginning at 6 o'clock as well. Get a $100 ounce Shiner Box Tower for $10, $3 Makers, $2 Mexican Candy. March Madness, $6 Casamigos. You can't find that anywhere. And then tomorrow, Houston Duke. It is your West Houston watch party for the Cougs. Full audio throughout the game and a DJ during the commercial breaks. Pretty fun. It's going to be a party out there at the Decoy tomorrow night. Party out there now as well. All right. Saquon Barkley was on with the Kelseys earlier today, and he talked about his number one destination in free agency, and he flat out said that the Texans were number one when the entire process got started, Blankers. So it begs the question, now that you know that Saquon wanted to be here, would you have rather given Saquon Barkley a 3-year, $37.75 million deal, which is a little over than a $12.5 million AAV, or would you rather give Joe Mixon a 3-year, $27 million deal, where the math's easier on that, a $9 million AAV?
Easy, Joe. I think the bigger thing to me is younger, less mileage on the tires, prime of his career. Yeah, it's a little bit more money, but we've seen that NFL teams are able to kind of get creative and shuffle money where they need to make it work. I would have gone Saquon. I just think that there were concerns. Obviously, Cincinnati moved on from him with Mixon because of the fact that they thought that he was past his prime. He was getting a little bit older. They could find better. You're getting a guy that could be one of the premier running backs in the league for the next couple of years that can do the kind of things Mixon can do and maybe better, stronger. I would have leaned Saquon if that was the case. I think from a Saquon perspective, too, as a sidebar, what are you doing? Philadelphia is the worst town in the world to tell that they were your second choice when you signed there. You're going to get eaten alive on a comment like that.
Unless you play well. If you play well, they're not going to care.
I think before you even start playing for real, you're going to hear about it.
Do you think they're going to boo him?
They're going to get on him. I think that pisses Philadelphia. Philly fans are so volatile anyway. That's the kind of thing that they're going to jump on.
Yeah, I wonder. Because you're right, they are the worst fans in the world. I wonder just how much they're going to, you know, care about that one. It is weird that he admitted to that, though. I will say that. But I guess, hey, we like transparency. We like the honesty. To me, it's quite easy. And you can make the case that, you mentioned that the Bengals gave up on Mixon. You can make the case that the Giants did that with Saquon, too, though. Like, the Giants weren't really in the mix for Saquon Barkley.
You got the owner, Mara, afterwards saying, I never wanted to let him go. I wish we would have been able to keep him.
They offered him more money.
I don't know. I mean, that's on him, but
that sounds like words more than actions.
Well, I mean, it could be. I just think that if you were ready to move on, then you just say that. We were ready to move on, and you know, we're ready to turn the page. It seemed like there were a lot of guys around that team that would have loved to keep him. Maybe he priced him out. I don't know. But, I just think the Cincinnati saw something that was not what it used to be with Mixon, whereas I think that the biggest thing with the Giants and Saquon was injuries.
I would have rather had Saquon on his contract than Mixon on his contract. And I know that Saquon, it's pretty substantial amount more. You know, a little over 12.25 versus $9 million. That's over what, 25% more. So that's pretty substantial when you're talking about having a salary cap and things like that. But if the Texans at the end of the day have like $5 million in cap space, and I know that you have to leave an operating budget and stuff like that, but if you could have spent $4 million more, a little less than $4 million more on Saquon, I'm going to turn around and look at this as a mistake. Because I think Saquon has far more left in the tank. I think Saquon's a more complete back than Mixon. D'Amico Ryans was talking about Mixon the other day about how he's really good in the passing game. Well, Saquon's pretty good at catching the football, too, and I don't think there's questions as much about Saquon with his ability to pass protect as there is Mixon. You have every Bengals fan in the world telling you that Mixon was almost unplayable in passing situations because he couldn't pass block. So I would have spent more on Saquon Barkley. That number is high on Saquon, but it's also high on Mixon. If I had to splurge for one of the two, I'd rather have splurged on Saquon.
Yeah, totally agree, and I think that a lot of it I touched on as well, and you look at it and you say, hey, he's a more physical guy that still seems to be as quick as Mixon. You mentioned the versatility with Saquon catching the football, and for sure in the prime of his career with less miles on the tires. Yeah, you can, like I said, you can make up for the extra money you would have had to spend to have the productivity that probably would have been better for the next 3 years.
The Progs on Twitter, Barkley's a mid running back, just a name, draft a nice backup. I do want to draft a nice backup, but, you know, Barkley's a mid-running back. I wouldn't say that. And I would say he's a better running back than Mixon. So, what is Mixon?
I'd be curious for people who have that opinion, what is it about Mixon's game currently that you would put, if you're, you know, comparing side by side and you're putting check marks on either side, on what side would you put a check mark for Mixon in favor of over Barkley? I mean, Barkley's younger. Barkley's been more elusive. He has fewer carries that less tread off the tires. I don't see a reason. They're both obviously good in the receiving part of the receiving game. Obviously, you mentioned the troubles pass blocking for Mixon. Like, what amongst the game, comparing directly Mixon and Barkley, not even to mention the off-the-field stuff, where along the comparison would you actually give a check mark to Mixon? I can't find a place.
That's a really good question, because to me, Jeremy, I'm thinking about it, and I'm going, like, you know me, I like to do the whiteboard and the side-by-side.
Sure.
I can't realistically find a category where I go, Joe Mixon better than Saquon Barkley.
I don't either.
Salary.
The other thing is salary.
Okay.
The other thing, though,
there's one.
Cusario was seeking Saquon Barkley. Like, they went after Saquon Barkley. There was reports out there of what the contract was for Saquon Barkley. And maybe Cusario knew that the Bengals were ultimately, like, shopping Joe Mixon. Like, I tend to believe that they had an idea that they were shopping Joe Mixon. I give them the benefit of the doubt on that. But maybe they didn't. But we did see Cusario go after Saquon Barkley.
Yep.
Like, we saw him give him an offer. So even if they knew that Joe Mixon was available, they even told you that Saquon Barkley was plan A before he priced himself out.
I think this is...
And we know now, Blankers, that Barkley priced out the Texans at $3.58 million a year, which, look, is that substantial? I would say that it is substantial, but I'm not saying that it's enough for me to go to my plan B and Joe Mixon over Saquon Barkley.
No, I think this is more the scenario of Nick knew who he wanted. He was going to be aggressive in going to get him, but he also had a threshold and a ceiling and a point where he was not going to return to the negotiations. And at a certain point, when they went over that threshold and it was looking like it was going to a number that he wasn't comfortable with, that's when he went to plan B. That's when, like you said, he probably either had the conversation or at least knew there was a chance that Cincinnati was going to cut Joe Mixon and there was an option there. And he started, you know, just weighing what his other options were and went in the other direction, because we know that he's calculated. He's going to go to a certain point, and then he's probably going to cut it off, and I think that's what happened.
9506 says Noah Brown at $5 million. I don't really know what that means, but maybe it means that's the difference between Saquon Barkley and Joe Mixon. Would you rather have Saquon Barkley, or would you rather have Noah Brown and Joe Mixon?
I would rather have Saquon Barkley.
Yeah, I'd rather have
Barkley. Yeah, certainly
too.
Saquon. Is this just the Caserio holding, and Joel mentioned this kind of in what he was saying just now, but this feels like Nick Caserio just holding a very, very hard line on what he views as the absolute ceiling for what he's willing to pay a player, because we saw this with Sheldon Rankins. They walked away over $1 million per year, and now obviously 3.5 per year, quite a bit more when you're talking about Saquon versus Joe Mixon. But it does feel like in both cases, if this was not a guy holding to a hard line on a number that he's willing to pay a player, I think those are both numbers that you'd be willing to go, okay, I give in. I'd want to get the guy on my team. I will go ahead and go a little bit over what I was willing to pay you.
I think there's a lot of that. I think that Nick Caserio draws his line in the sand. I think he negotiates up to that line. And as soon as that line is passed, he's done with you completely. Before even really thinking about what's the cost of plan B, what's the cost and how much we're willing to, like the $3.5 million here. You might be right with the Rankins one. Like, Rankins losing out on $1 million more. That's worse than the Saquon Barkley. Because look, I understand having your maximum amount. I get that. But you also have to talk about what is the second option look like and how much savings are we actually getting. Because right now it's like you got Malik Collins for, Rankins for less than, you know, you don't bring Rankins back and you miss out on that for $1 million, but then you have to settle. And then the same thing here. Okay, we're not willing to overspend by $3.5 million. Now, this is over multiple years, so I think it's not as egregious as the Rankins one. But I'd rather pay the Saquon $3.5 million than the Mixon $9 million. I'd rather have Saquon Barkley than Mixon and Robert Woods. Noah Brown. I'd rather cut Robert Woods and then have Saquon Barkley.
You read my mind.
So many different options.
That was my response to the texter too. Like, okay, I hear you, and I'll raise you the fact that if you wanted Noah Brown as well and you're saying that's the difference, then cut Robert Woods, draft another receiver, believe that Hutchinson and Mechie are going to be better than they were a year ago, and ride with that, knowing that you got a better running back, and the return on investment is going to be the added extra you get at running back, and you still get Noah Brown.
Yeah, like everybody operates with a budget, right? We've all had budgets in certain aspects of our life. You mentioned you always talk about the Rockets, and if you want to get, you know, $500 here, where can you save $500? You know, we all have to budget our household, blah 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 blah. Caserio's budgeting an NFL payroll, so. Like, I get, well, we only want to spend 11.5 on Saquon, not willing to go 12.5. Well, how about you spend the 12.5 on your plan A? Because you've told us that was plan A. Joe Mixon, you traded for Joe Mixon after you made an offer for Saquon Barkley. So Saquon Barkley was at the top of your list. He was plan A at running back for the Houston Texans. So, okay, it's going to cost us $3.5 million more. Well, where can you save $3.5 million to sign your better running back that you want that's at the top of your list? And I think there's multiple ways to do that with this team, whether it's Noah Brown, whether it's Robert Woods, whether it's Jimmy Ward. So I don't love the way – and I like the Texans offseason, so I don't want people to get that twisted. I like what they've done overall, but if we're nitpicking certain things, I don't love how he handled the monetary side of this in budgeting, because I could have come up with a way to save $3.5 million to give me my plan A at running back instead of plan B.
Yeah, that's how we started this. I mentioned NFL GMs are creative with their finances. There are ways. The reason why the Saints were so like $80 million over the cap one year, and by the time free agency opened, they were under by $20 million. There's a multitude of ways you can make up for that money. if you really fully believe that the player that you're going after is a difference maker for that those years.
713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line. 4280 says, Barkley is a cancer, never Barkley, Robert in Beaumont. Is there anything that I've missed on Barkley where he's not a good teammate or that he's a problem? Have I missed something there? I don't recall.
I haven't heard of anything, no.
Okay. Yeah, I don't. Maybe he's making a Barkley joke. I don't know. I've never heard that. It was not a good joke either. 713-780-3776. Willabits. What Willabit are we getting today? You never know, but you know it's going to be good. It's the Killer Bees live from the Decoy in Spring Branch on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, a moment to talk about X-Golf and Katie. If you're a golfer, you love to golf all times of the day and night. Sometimes I said night. Some people say, well, how do you golf at night? You go to X-Golf because they got the best simulators I've ever seen for golf. That means the putting as well as the chipping. And you can play up to 50 courses worldwide, or you can just use it like a driving range, so much so that you can even hit your own golf ball that you hit on the course. And then their shot trackers, unbelievable in terms of being able to accurately pinpoint the distance, the direction, the ball flight, the spin of every shot you hit. You can calculate. You can dial in your irons. You can do all these things in the comfort of an indoor air-conditioned facility. It's phenomenal. And, oh, by the way, it's like the best sports bar you've ever been to, too, because it's a combination of great food and beverage and all the TVs you need and eight unbelievable golf simulators that you can play. It's fantastic, and it's all right there in Katy. Check out X Golf Katy on the internet. You can book a tee time. You can reserve a simulator, and you can go in and have some fun. Be there once, you'll be there a ton, because if you're a golfer, you are going to love the fact that morning, bad weather, at night, you can tune in and really tune up your golf, and you can always go there to watch games, eat food, and drink beverages. Check them out today, X Golf Katy.
It's the Killer Bees, and I honestly have no idea what's happening next. Could it be the next great big food debate? The biggest Joel rant of all time? Jeremy trolling someone to the point of crying? Or just some actual bees making some honey? Well, let's find out. It's time for the Wheel of Bits.
Oh my goodness, would you look at this? What an enormous bit.
Let's play Choose Only One.
Only one. What an enormous spin. Killer Bees, Decoy in Spring Branch, $100 ounce Scheinerbach Towers for just $10. That's fantastic. $3 Makers, $2 Mexican
candy. What an enormous tower of beer.
Yeah, those are fantastic. March Madness, $6 Casamigos. That's fantastic. Also, if you're looking for a spot to watch the Cougs tomorrow in West Houston, well, the Decoy in Spring Branch, that spot. Full audio throughout the broadcast, DJ during the commercials. It's going to be a party there tomorrow night. All right, choose only one. Question today, Willabits, choose only one. You only get one here, Blankers. 713-780-3776 if the Hyde wants to play along. Choose only one, Jalen Green or Alpi Shingun?
This is tough, man. This is tough.
Sure is.
You know, man, I mean, what you know versus what you think is going to continue. I mean,
this might be the question the Rockets are faced with at some point.
I hope not. I hope, because I believe that they have the right coaches to be able to figure it out offensively. This is a tough question for me, but I think, because of the fact that it's not a big man's league anymore, because of the fact that Alpi doesn't play defense, because of the fact that I think that you can get by without the numbers that Alpi put up and still be successful, I'm going to say if I have to pick one or the other, Jalen Green's talent is at a notch above. And I would say Jalen Green if I have to choose one. And Alpi would bring you back something pretty darn good.
It's not that tough for me, to be realistic. I'm going Jalen Green. And it's not tough for me. I think their offensive efficiency is pretty similar. Like, they do it in much different ways. Alpi does it in the low post. I think he's very creative offensively. He's a good passing big man. He's got some touch. I do want to see his three-point shooting get better. Shot it better last year than this year. He's made a little bit more volume this year, though. So I think, like, their offensive game in terms of production, somewhat similar. I think they're both good to really good offensive players. Where I think that Alpi loses in this conversation is on the defensive side. And you probably couldn't say that prior to this year because Jalen wasn't a good defensive player either. But Jalen has turned the corner there. Jalen's a willing defender now. And Jalen has a skill set and attributes that just make him better defensively than Alpi does, because he's strong, he's faster, he's quicker, he has more elevation, so he can contest shots better. Alpi's a liability defensively, and Jalen Green is not. If I'm running an offense against the Houston Rockets, I'm trying to figure out how I can attack Alpi Şengün. I'm forcing him to defend the pick and roll. If he's switching up against a guard, then you have a huge mismatch because you have a quicker guard against a slow-footed big man. You can't do that with Jalen Green. I think it's why the Rockets are playing so well right now, is because you have five guys on the floor that can all switch. So I think Alpi's a little bit more one-sided. He can play on one side of the floor, whereas Jalen Green has shown that he's as good offensively as Alpi, and he can play a little bit of defense. So I'm choosing Jalen Green, and I'm not really even batting my eye. I'm not even thinking twice on this.
The big thing, too, is from the standpoint of people are going to say, well, you know what, there's very few bigs that can do what Alpi can do, and they're going to go to Embiid, and they're going to go to the Joker. But the fact is those two guys can play defense. The Embiid for sure can play defense. The Joker, he doesn't look like a mountain of muscle, but low post, he's smart, he's savvy, he understands switches, and he has more size, I think, than Alpi. But you know what? It's so rare to find the level of talent across the board that Jalen has that I don't think he even realizes how much is untapped still from what he can develop and polish as skills that he can put in his bag. That's why, to me, he gets the vote.
Good news is you have both. Yeah. Brian, where do you stand on this? You can only choose one, Jalen Green, Alpi Şengün. Who are you going with?
Yeah, we're going to make it unanimous. I just think for a lot of the reasons you guys mentioned, and this is going to sound sacrilege from where we came from just, about a month ago when Şengün was clearly the choice, and we wouldn't even ask this question a month ago. But I think Jalen has not only the higher maximum upside, it could be the caliber. Because one of the questions we had about Şengün is, despite how well he was playing, could he be the number one on a championship-level team? And I didn't see that upside for him. For Jalen Green, if he hits what we've seen, in these last, eight, nine, ten games, it is not only copied, but then upped again as he continues to grow and mature, then I see an upside for Jalen Green that's absolutely the best player on a championship-caliber team. I don't see that for Şengün. You mentioned the defensive problems as well, and I also think not that he's a Luis Scola type, but I think you can fill that sort of role that Şengün might vacate if you were to choose between one of them much easier than a top-level guard that can lead you towards a championship.
You're just not losing really any offense, right? Like, Alpi's best side of the ball is on offense. When he's not playing, are you losing offense with this team? I don't think you really are. Like, I think that Jalen and Alpi can coexist, certainly. But since Alpi's been hurt, this team hasn't slipped offensively. You can even say they've taken off offensively. They've played better offensively. Now, some of that's the schedule. I think it's more schedule than, like, they don't coexist. But there are some things that, you clear up space, it helps Jalen Green. I think it's more noticeable on the defensive side than the offensive side. But they haven't slipped. They haven't slipped on the offensive end since Alpi's been hurt. Well, and they've gotten better defensively. There's no question they've gotten better defensively.
No doubt. But here's the other thing, too, Jeremy. It goes to our conversation about the fact that you also have guys that haven't played in recently that could actually add to you making up for the offense and then some. If Cam Whitmore, if Tari Eason, those guys come in and they're capable of picking up a ton of offensive slack, the rebounds that Tari can get, the fact that, Cam Whitmore is versatile. All you got to do is find a big that can and maybe Steven Adams is part of that equation. Steven Adams is going to be a better defender. He's physical. He's strong. He's going to rebound. He doesn't need to score. And like you said, because there are other options for you to score and he's a better defender, it's easier to replace Alpi because he doesn't play defense.
I also think a little bit here with Şengün, and not that Şengün, can't run or keep up, just can't keep up at all in an up-tempo offense, but some of what we've seen recently with Jabari Smith Jr. and Amen Thompson, I mean, the pace last night in the OKC game is unbelievable. So I like the idea of not having to adjust to, because you've built your roster and your offense in a way, like as you guys have said, in a very fast-paced, fast-tempo style of play. I don't want to bring back Şengün and then to make him work have to slow the offense down a little bit. I'd rather find someone else who could fit into that system than to slow the system down to fit Şengün.
I've seen some of the numbers on that don't necessarily back that up, where the tempo's been relatively the same for whenever Şengün was on the floor. So I don't know how much validity there is to that, because my eye test tells me the same thing Brian, that it seems like they're playing a little bit quicker, a little bit more speed, a little bit more pace. But the numbers actually say that the pace has been pretty similar to when Alpe went out and to where you are now. So there is that.
Also,
is Stephen Adams, Blinkers, to me? Go ahead.
No, yeah, I was going to say on that point you made, too. The other thing is it's deceiving to the eye because it's how quickly you get the ball in transition or from one end to the other. But because it just looks like it takes longer from the elbow or the low post to facilitate, it's the speed of the cutters where the ball's going that the offense still moves very fast based on the cuts and where the ball moves to.
Yeah, maybe they're not getting more possessions and stuff like that, but it just looks faster. I would agree with that. 9506 Alpe, 50 days a week. It's a lot of days. 8458 and Jalen, I trust. Alpe too slow in the middle. So there you go. A couple of thoughts on which of the two that you're picking. On the Stephen Adams front, to me, he's a good backup big man. Like I don't think that he's going to like necessarily be a guy, even if you were to trade Alpe. I don't think they're trading Alpe, but just for the sake of this conversation, I think Adams is more of your backup center.
He is.
I was having a conversation with a bud. Like, I don't consider Stephen Adams a rim protector, even though he is a giant of a man. Do you think he's much of a rim protector?
No, you know what he is, Jeremy? Because you're right. I was just using it as the comparison of at least you have
sure,
a guy.
There's not much drop-off.
Robert Williams is the ultimate way you solve this problem, a Robert Williams type, an athletic, long, big, cleans the glass, blocks shots, doesn't need the ball offensively, athletic enough to get up and down the floor so he doesn't slow you down, and he can, you know, get the alley-oops and the putbacks. To your question, I believe that he's not a rim protector, he is a lane enforcer. He is a guy that will clog the lane and physically keep you out of the lane that way, but he's definitely never going to be known as a guy that's going to, you know, get above the rim, block shots, do those things.
6967, I agree. It's Jalen. Absolutely wild how the script has flipped in one calendar month. When did it flip for you? Because, like, Alpe would have been my answer up until about 4 weeks ago?
Yeah.
3 weeks
ago? I think
ago?
It's the last month, for sure. It's the fact that we've seen this. We've seen it multiple times now to know that it's not going to go away and disappear, and he's not going to hit this big pitfall downward again. And the fact that what we've seen, too, is it's not just about scoring anymore. It's about getting, like last night, getting the open guy the ball when you need a big shot. It doesn't necessarily have to come from you. Not being offensive-minded with blinders on where if it's in my hands, it's to score. And then the fact that he's playing defense, he's getting back on defense, and he's affecting plays on the other end. That's what we needed to see, and we saw it. We saw it consistently now.
6856, all that Astro talk, Beham, they better win this. Do you understand how baseball works, 6856? Do you understand that baseball is a 162-game season?
Joe does.
Question if you do. Yeah, he thinks it's 583.
That's right.
713-780.
I think he got it up over 600.
Yeah, he had the over on that number. Car wreck of the day. What are you nominating for our car wreck of the day? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
You all right?
My leg is broken. The bone's coming through.
Let me see. Give me all you prick. Where's my money?
This is the car wreck of the day.
Killer Bees and the Decoy in Spring Branch. 100-ounce Shinerbach Towers, $10, $3 Makers, $2 Mexican Candy, $6 March Madness Casamigos. And tomorrow at your West Houston watch party, Cougs, Duke, full audio of the game DJ during the breaks. All right, Blankers, what are you nominating for Car Wreck of the Day? 713-780-3776 if the Hive want to nominate some people. But who are you nominating, Blankers?
Easy one is Draymond Green. I mean, how many times are you going to put your team behind the eight ball and act up? And in a case like this where they're obviously in a dogfight with the Rockets for the play-in, the last thing you can afford to do is abandon your teammates 4 minutes into a game by just doing something so asinine as to continue to berate an early foul in a game like that. Just absolute stupidity.
He's a bad teammate. He's selfish. He's a bad teammate. I do not want him on my team. Like, how can you count on him? Like, they're in a playoff race. And I understand it's a playing game, but like they're a championship organization. Like that, Steph Curry's won a bunch of titles. That team aspires to win championships, and you're telling me that one of your best players is going to get ejected in 3 to 4 minutes and cost? Like, luckily they won the game for Golden State point of view. It's a selfish teammate, though. It's a bad teammate. I don't like that. I don't want anything like that on my team.
You know, the other thing, too, Jeremy, is the fact that everybody's saying, well, at the end of the year, because Steph deserves better, we can blow this thing up. How many teams in the league want Draymond Green on their squad? To your
especially
point,
the contract.
Yeah, the Lakers, of course, would probably consider it because they think LeBron and you know, he just needs however he can get the help he needs. But he's not coming cheap, and he's not going to change his ways no matter who else he's playing with, I don't think.
Yeah, I wouldn't want him on my team. That contract's stupid, too. I'm going to try to Branham foot and mouth this and nominate Joe Espada for our car wreck of the day. Maybe it'll change the fortune. He's out there managing this game like it's a World Series game. It's game one of 162, Joe. I know it's your managerial debut, but pump the brakes a little bit. He's trying to be the smartest guy in the room. Pinch hitting for a guy who homered in the sixth. Bringing Ryan Pressly into the game in the seventh. Gave up the go-ahead run. Hey, it's one of 162, Joe. Take it easy.
Can
chill
I take
out
a
little
further
bit
and ask
that?
Your opinion on that? I don't know that I like bringing Hader in the ninth. That's in a non-save situation.
There you go. That's kind of, I forgot about that one because it's kind of what I meant. Like, it's not a playoff
right.
game. It's not a World Series game. It's game one of 162. You don't need your closure to come into the ninth to protect a one-run game here. Like, this isn't the game 163. This isn't the postseason. Let's pump the brakes here a little bit, Joe Espada. So I'm going to nominate Joe Espada for our car regular day. They just win it.
Oh, come on!
What happened?
Sorry, Jeremy. Dubon got thrown out at the plate. Kyle Tucker hit a single to right, but Soto threw out Dubon trying to score from second.
It's close. I don't know if they're going to – there's man.
The throw got there before Dubon, but the throw was also not completely online, so it gave Dubon a chance, and he was called out.
I'm gonna nominate Gary Pettis now. That's a bad sin.
Yeah, Soto's already throwing the ball before Dubon's even rounded third.
Yeah, that's a bad send. He's got a cannon for an arm and right. You have a bases loaded one out situation if you don't send him. You
with
have
Alex
Bregman coming
to
the
up.
Play.
Yeah.
That's a bad send. Gary Pettis, you're nominated now for our car wreck of the day.
Oh, do we nominate Fromber or Montero?
Yeah, you can nominate them both.
Oh, I don't know if you got them, Jeremy.
I mean, I'm sure they're challenging it, huh?
Yeah, they
you guys
are. They
30
are.
30 seconds in front of me. All right, what are you nominating?
I'm just
Brian?
Saying.
I will nominate the Killer G's for both not knowing who Billy Gibbons is of ZZ Top and then letting the text line trick them into believing that Billy Gibbons was dead. So it was a banner day for
follow up
Houston music knowledge from the Killer G's.
And then just so that Joe doesn't get excluded from his daily nomination, the fact that yesterday Joe George on the air said that Josh Giddey sucks as a basketball player, and Josh Giddey had his best game of his career against the Rockets last night and went off.
Ooh, did Dubon actually get tagged?
That's what I just said.
I don't think it's conclusive.
Yeah, that's the problem. I haven't seen an angle that's conclusive, but just gut reaction off of what I saw, it looks like the catcher might have missed him a little bit.
I don't think
it's super close. I don't know if it's close. I think it's probably too close to get overturned. But man,
yeah, well, that's all that matters. Oh. I'm nominating the Tampa Bay Rays. The Tampa Bay Rays acquired Nico Badrum in a trade yesterday. In what world does Nico Badrum have any sort of value? Now, because I know the Tampa Bay organization so well, Nico Badrum's going to turn into like a specialist in one way and like shine and excel in that one area. But how are we acquiring Nico Badrum in 2024? How does that guy have value still left in Major League Baseball?
I mean, once he earned the nickname, I think he earned his permanent spot in AAA baseball.
He feels like a classic 4A player for
yeah,
sure.
For sure.
What else we got?
I said, do we consider Montero and Fromber?
I would like to nominate Yankees fans because when the Yankees went down 4-0, I saw tons of national media and just people I follow on Twitter that happen to be Yankees fans freaking out, calling this at one point even a disaster. You're down 4-0 halfway through game one of 162, and they were calling it a, quote, disaster.
Yeah, out at the plate.
Get some perspective,
that's
guys.
Yankee fans.
Flip the script. I saw a lot of people upset that Joe Girardi didn't have the proper credential to go into the Astros locker room, and people thought like the Astros were being vindictive and all this stuff against the Yankees whenever it was actually Girardi's fault, and then Joe Espada met with him anyways. So it's like, what are you getting all up in arms and you're getting all mad?
Everybody was celebrating the fact that he wasn't allowed in the clubhouse either. Come on, man. There's more other things we can worry about.
Yeah, 2223, he's nominated the 800 pounds of crawfish lost in a wreck on I-10 in Orange County.
Rest oh, I didn't see that.
I mean, 800 pounds of
crawfish. That's an expensive loss right
there. 800 pounds of crawfish?
Because, I mean, you... Like, how much are you paying a pound right now to buy?
Isn't it $14 a pound right now?
I have no idea.
I think so. So, like, let's round it down to 10. That's like 8,000. Like, that's like cooked crawfish, though. Raw crawfish, live crawfish, you can probably get for maybe $5 a pound. So that's like $4,000 worth of crawfish that got lost in that wreck on I-10. I think this might have been a heist. I'm not sure that this was a wreck. This might have been a heist. This might have been Ocean's 11.
I hope someone salvaged it, like when the semis crash and all the product goes all over the highway and people scramble to pick it up.
Yeah. That's a lot of crawfish. Astros lost the opener.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Bad send at third. I agree with you, Jeremy. I think that's
less than 2 hours.
I think that might be my official car wreck of the day nominee. The send at third to send Dubon. When Dubon was just getting the third, Soto was already gathering the ball for the throw. Has a cannon of an arm. Terrible send there.
It looked like Dubon was kind of chopping his steps into third, too. Like he had no... Like, he didn't think there was any chance he was going to be waived. I'm going to have to go back and watch that. But it looked like Dubon started to slow his steps at third, like he was just going to cruise into third instead of actually turn third and score. And
you know what you're going to hate for me to say? But, you know, it's a hot button with me. It's also that freaking watered-down infield that still looks like it's soaking wet, and he couldn't slide quickly across the dirt.
I mean, it's in the ninth inning, though. I'm sure it's dried up soft.
I don't think so. It looks swampy. It looks swampy.
Your obsession to the water on the Minute Maid infield is one of the weirdest things I've ever heard.
I hate it.
I know you should apply. It's bizarre to me.
You should apply for the job. See if you can regulate the wetness level of the infield dirt.
It's like, you know, when you try and slide on like AstroTurf the wrong way, the rubbery stuff, if it's sticky. It just seems like he got caught up in the mud.
What a terrible send. Gary Pettis bad. Doing Gary Pettis things. All right, what's winning the car wreck of the day?
Gary Pettis.
Any objection?
That's my
blankers?
Vote.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, Gary Pettis, congratulations. One game in and you're the car wreck of the day with the worst send I've seen all year. Thanks to the Decoy and Spring Branch for having us out. Get out there for the rest of the evening. College Hoops about to start. The West Houston watch party for the Cougs tomorrow. Full audio DJ. Thanks so much for the hospitality. That does it for us. Thanks to Brian McDonald, our onside engineer. Austin Rodriguez doing all the hard work in the studio. For Blankers, I'm Branham. We'll talk to you tomorrow, Houston. Game on with Barry Laminack, Jerome Solomon. Coming up next on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.